Right now, let's go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. He's coming in hot. It's Nathan Zagura at Nathan Zagura on Twitter. He is your Browns analyst on the Browns Radio Network. He's alongside Andrew Siciliano in the booth and Gerard Cherry on the sideline. And he'll be doing Sunday afternoon's game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Nathan Zagura, good morning to you.
Good morning, Monfrere. Pleasure to be with you.
It's wonderful to talk to you. All right. Spirits were high on Wednesday, considering everything going on. I know there's things we can and can't get into, and that's I want to remain respectful of everything, but been a pretty wild week. What are we expecting from this Browns offense here, Nathan?
Well, they're going to need to be better than they were against the Dallas Cowboys. I think you kind of look at that game, and the quarterback needs to be better, the receivers need to be better, and the offensive line needs to be better. You know, Deshaun Watson was under early pressure more often than any Browns quarterback has been in years in that game against the Dallas Cowboys. That's not something that's typical of the Browns offensive line, but part of the reason that happened is because the Browns were so bad on first down, and they found themselves at 2nd and 10 or in first and 15, first and 20 behind the sticks. And in fact, they faced 3rd and long in that game against Dallas 46% of the time. The league average was in the 20s, so more than double the league average in terms of 3rd and longs in that game, and that allowed Dallas to pin their ears back and go get after Deshaun Watson. If they do that again in Jacksonville, it's going to be the same story. If they're that bad on first down in the early downs, it's going to be the same story, because Josh Hines-Allen, 17.5 sacks last year, 2nd in the NFL on one side. Trayvon Walker, 10 sacks last year. He had 2 in week 1. They're the only pair of edge rushers in the league last year to both have double-digit sacks, and they added Eric Armstead in the middle. So this offense needs to be better on first down. I know it is a massive point of emphasis. Eliminate those pre-snap penalties and make positive plays on first down to set yourself up for some of those situations where the Jags have to prepare for both the run and the pass, and you can actually take some shots down the field instead of being forced to dink and dunk your way down.
Did you think a lot of it was just simply the penalties? We saw there were 10 on offense of the 11, and a lot of them were just, you know, things that could be first game, new alignment on that offensive line, the left tackle situation, obviously going up against Micah Parsons.
Yeah, I mean, look, the penalties had a huge role with it. There was also some inefficiency in terms of not getting positive yardage on some of your early down runs, missing for either guys that were open or having guys that were open drop the football. So I think it was a combination of things, but eliminating those penalties that you talked about, Anthony, will go a long way to putting yourself in better situations on second down and then on third down. So, yeah, I do think the penalties played a big role. 10 on the offense, I mean, that's how do you expect to be able to win like that and keep yourself on schedule? You can't.
Nathan Zagura joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Joel Bitonio, bit of a rough day, also hurt his elbow. What are we expecting for the offensive line for the future here as Andy Dickerson tries to get these guys in rhythm?
Well, hopefully they'll be able to bounce back. There's, you know, you can see going around the internet all the one-on-one reps of DeJuan Jones against Micah Parsons, and that had to leave you feeling pretty good about what your big second-year right tackle's doing. I thought Wyatt played pretty well. It was a rough game in the middle to left side with Posick and Bitonio and then James Hudson, as we know. It's hopeful that perhaps Jack Conklin will be ready to go this week at left tackle, which would be his first start there, but he's a two-time first-team All-Pro right tackle in the league, and hopefully that helps. But when you can keep the defense of the Jags kind of on their heels in the sense that you're dictating to them, hey, we have the option to run or pass here, we're getting ourselves in good situations, I think you really can attack them. And the key with that is that offensive line giving some time and being in positions where they're able to give some time, because the back end of this Jags defense is bad, and it is hurt right now. Their number one corner, Tyson Campbell, is out. He just got placed on injured reserve. Their other corner, Ronald Darby, last week gave up a perfect 158.3 rating in coverage, over 100 yards and a touchdown. He hasn't had a pick since 2019. And then their other two corners are going to be a rookie third rounder who gave up 75% completions and 117 rating in week 1, and Monteric Brown, who was their 7th round pick in 22, he allowed 100% completions and 115 rating in week 1. So if the Browns can get time, they should be able to attack this defense down the field. So I think it's a very important game for number 1, staying on schedule, and then number 2, the line doing a good job against a very good front of the Jags, allowing Deshaun Watson and these receivers, who I think have a big, big advantage, to get down the field and make plays. Because the Jags in week 1 played man coverage on 66% of their snaps. That was the highest rate in the league by a wide margin, 53% single high, man one. If they do that against the Browns and the Browns are able to block, they should have a ton of success in this game. Now, I look back at Ryan Nielsen, the defensive coordinator of the Jags, in 2023 in Atlanta, didn't play man quite at that rate, not even close to it, honestly, played a lot more cover three. So I think with those injuries in the secondary, you could see more zone this week from the Jags, but that should allow the Browns to have clear ideas of what defenses and coverages they play and where the ball needs to go.
Nathan Zagura joining us on the hotline. So making that running game work to make things easier for your quarterback, it's what every team would love to do. Obviously, we think we have the personnel to be able to do it, even without Nick Chubb. Are we surprised there weren't some of those plays that are more an extension of the running game available? And I know they don't have Njoku, which has always been a great weapon in trying to soften defenses up. But are there things they can do in game two to try to make that easier?
Yeah, and I think this week you'll see a little Deontay Foreman as well. They never really got to get into a position in the game where they were able to use him. I think he's a guy maybe on some early downs where Ford and Strong have that home run ability. And you saw Strong get out of the backfield. They finally ran some screens in that game and picked up some yardage there. And that's one of the ways certainly you can alleviate the pass rush screens and draws. But Deontay Foreman, I think he's a guy that maybe on some early downs, in addition to kind of short yardage goal line work, I think he's a guy that's going to get you 3, 4, 5 yards, you know, and put you in those better spots for second and third down. And so I could see him get more action this week to help out there. But it's just going to be a matter of when you get the right read, delivering the football and making sure the guys catch it. I think Jordan Akins, it's a big loss with the Chief. The Chief is probably, you know, he's a top two all-around tight end in the league in terms of his ability to run and then what he means as a blocker to this offense. Jordan Akins is a good pass catcher. You go back to 22 in Houston, when he was the starter, 37 catches, 495 yards, led all tight ends with 13.4 yards a catch, had 5 touchdowns as well. So he's more of a receiver. So in this kind of role where he's going to play that receiving tight end, I think he will be very effective for the Cleveland Browns and be a nice outlet for Deshaun in this one. And by the way, they've got familiarity going back to the times that they played together in Houston where they connected for over 1,000 yards of receiving or passing, depending on how you're looking at it.
I love taking a look around the league with you, Nathan. Tua's concussion yesterday. How, do you have a conversation with a guy about retirement? Can you tell a grown man he needs to retire? It's a delicate situation there because he just got signed to a very, very, very large contract. And people could say, well, there's things that are in life that are more important than money. Yeah, when it's not your money, it's easy to say something like that.
It is. I mean, I think obviously he needs to meet with a bunch of neurologists and make the decision that's best for him. I just find it to be very scary because I think of the two scariest concussions in terms of how the person's body responded after the concussion, and they've both been Tua. It's not like it's something that you see regularly in the NFL with really any other player. And you think about, you know, when he fell down against Baltimore, then the Bengals game, which is hard to watch back. And then tonight, last night was, I thought, very hard to watch. And it was very, very unfortunate. And yeah, you're seeing a lot of ex-players, you know, guys like Dez Bryant and others, saying he's got to retire, it's too much. But again, that's his personal decision, and I'm sure he will make it with a great deal of thought with his family and with his doctors. But very scary, and you hate to see it. You hate to see that happen and in such a unique way, right? Because he was the runner, and kind of he initiated all the contact on that one. It's unfortunate. I hate to see it.
Based on what you saw from Buffalo in the first 2 weeks of the year, we know it's early, but a lot of people were kind of writing them off before the season started. I didn't necessarily understand that. So do you think they are going to be one of those top teams in the AFC this year?
It's hard to say. They've always played well against the Dolphins, and quite frankly, the Arizona Cardinals gave them everything that they could handle, and they were at home in that game. So I think it's early. Look, Josh Allen is elite. He is excellent. He, along James Cook, is making plays. They don't have the receiving core that they had traditionally, so we haven't really seen them in a game yet where they have to be kind of just a pure drop-back passing team and see what that looks like for them, given the kind of the change in talent, I would call it, on the outside. Diggs is gone. Gabe Davis is gone. So that's still, to me, a little bit of a question. They changed a lot on their defense, lost their defense, so we'll have to see how that holds up down the season, but they've been more impressive, certainly last night. I got a chance to watch the Arizona game, and it was not as impressive, other than Josh Allen was singularly great. This game, they dominated Miami, and really that's kind of been what they've done the last few years. So that was kind of on brand. But I don't know that they're one of the top NFL teams, but are they a very good team and a team – you know, likely to contend for the playoffs, and quite frankly, that division now, because Miami's not going to have Tua at least for some period of time. That's going to make it hard for them, and we'll see how Aaron Rodgers comes back with the Jets. I still like their chances a lot, but that's a last night in many, many ways kind of helped paint the picture and clear the path for the Bills to be a team of consequence in that division and the AFC.
Does he signify, does Josh Allen highlight how good Patrick Mahomes is? Because you see Josh Allen do these things and people go, meh, because do they know he's just going to get beat by Mahomes in the end? At least they feel that way.
It's hard. It's kind of the same with Lamar Jackson, right? Like,
yeah.
Lamar Jackson's a two-time MVP, but I think that it's hard for people to envision them making a deep run in the playoffs because of Mahomes and even a guy like Josh Allen. Now, they were able to get by him last year when a field goal missed, but yeah, it's a tough thing to come out of the AFC, and it is certainly the only team that's really been able to do it, are the Chiefs. So, and you had the Bengals a few years ago, but really it's been kind of Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. Brady beat him early on, but that's been it. So yeah, it's a hard thing, and it's tough to maybe put some of these guys into proper perspective, given that they're running into kind of that buzzsaw. It'd kind of be like every other NBA team, other than, you know, when the Cavs did get the win over the Warriors. But once the Warriors kind of put together that super duper team, it's like, what are you going to do? You're running a super team. Think about the Cavs back in the day, great basketball team. They'd run into Jordan and the Bulls, and sometimes it's bad luck in terms of who's in your era and who's in your conference.
Nathan, are the Bengals washed up? Is it over for Joe Burrow?
I mean, I think it's way too early to say that.
Yeah, but T. Higgins, Nathan, they're accusing T. Higgins of faking an injury.
Way, yeah, Browns color analyst says the Bengals are washed and done. No, I'm not saying that at all. Not at all. But I would say that some of the things you're seeing from them on offense are a little concerning, and that is, and things that we've kind of seen as trends over the last couple of years, which is shotgun, so finesse, not much in the ground game, quick passes, not looking down the field, not taking some of those vertical shots. And I think the problems you see there are, number one, T. Higgins is hurt. Number two, Ja'Marr Chase is clearly not happy about his contract situation. And you saw him after multiple routes where he felt he was open down the field and didn't get the ball, kind of being demonstrative in his frustration. So I do think that there are some problems down there. And it's, you know, I don't know about the water bottle and what really was going on there with Joe Burrow, but it does appear, though, that the wrist is bothering him because he keeps shaking it out and looking at it, and he's not driving the ball like he did back when they went on their Super Bowl run in 2021. But that's still a very, very talented football team.
Nathan Zagura joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I don't know when you guys go down to Jacksonville, but on your flight down tomorrow. Tomorrow. So when you go down, are you going to recline your seat?
Oh, baby. Listen, no, it's not a red eye. I'm not interested in sleeping. Of course I'm not going to
recline. Keep your seat up.
On a flight like that.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And let me tell you something, Mon Frere. After you besmirched my good name.
You cussed me good, though. You cussed me good, though, when after I saw you after that.
I sure did. If you couldn't recline a seat, it wouldn't be there, number one. Number two, if it was an old-school recline where, like, the recline came solely from the fact that my back went into your lap, I wouldn't do it either, even though I needed to sleep. It's a red eye. Need to get some sleep. That was one of the new-style reclines where it reclines because it scoots my butt forward and kind of leaves the top where it was. So it's really not even an inconvenience to you in any way, shape, or form, Mon Frere.
I didn't need it, it felt like it took away my personal space. I didn't need to sleep on the flight back. My sleep's not important.
Your sleep is totally important. And then you can, but guess what? If everybody reclines, it's the exact same as if nobody reclines. So everybody has the right to do it. Everybody has the ability to do it. There's a button right there on the seat that says go ahead. There aren't rules that say you cannot do that. And I wouldn't listen. Everybody has to make their own decisions. If you want to be a recline, you don't want to recline, that's on you. I chose to recline, and I have zero regrets about it. I couldn't have fewer regrets about it, Mon Frere, and I'm very pleased to tell you I did get some nice sleep. And the weird thing to me is we had multiple nice interactions on that flight. You never said, hey, man, your seat's all up.
Because I wasn't going to ruin the interactions, because I knew if I was like, hey, can you put your seat up, you were going to be thinking about that the entire flight. And then I would hear about it from Gibbs later on. I knew it was going to happen that way. Uh-huh.
I don't know why. We're talking about, and here's the other thing. We're talking about airplanes now, and you know how they're made. It's not like I'm lying flat. what do you get? Maybe a half of an inch of a wrinkle there.
Oh yeah.
I mean, we gotta keep it real a little bit. It's not like I'm getting a whole lot out of this recline.
Well, I had to say something.
I mean, it
just felt a little bit odd that there was reclining going on. But, hey, you do what you want. All right.
Reclining, by the way, you opened your eyes. There was reclining going on all over that plane.
See, I didn't pay attention to anybody else. I was paying attention to myself and you reclining in my space.
A quarter of an inch.
Quarter of an inch. Quarter of an inch is still a quarter of an inch. I'm entitled to that quarter of an inch. That's a first down. That's a first down, buddy.
Don't lie. That's why the button's on my chair, Montfair.
Yeah, fair.
So am I.
Nathan, thank you for the time, friend.
Love it.
Nathan's a girl on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Did you see, by the way, Connor Stallions became the interim head coach?
And they get crushed in game
60
one.
60-0, which I feel bad under the circumstances because the actual coach, I think, had a stroke down over at Mumford High School up in Detroit.
I did want to ask you a question about this.
What?
I know we had something else. We're going to hear from Jim Schwartz here in a little bit.
We're going to hear from Jim Schwartz very shortly.
So, Kenny, how hard is it to become a high school football coach? I used to think it was really hard.
It depends.
And now I think you kind of pick your situation, and anybody, if they really wanted, could become a high school football
coach. Do you want to be a good high school football coach or just a high school football coach?
Just a high school football coach. How hard is it?
It's not very hard. It's not very hard. It's not very hard.
I mean, in many communities, the high school football coach is the biggest role that one can have on that community.
Oh, yeah. I'm from Stark County, buddy. It's the SEC of Ohio. Yeah, it's the biggest role anybody could have.
I mean, Parkersburg, West Virginia, the Parkersburg Big Red high school football coach was the biggest deal in the city.
Perry Township. Keith Wakefield was and still is a god. I mean, there's people who revile him just because their kids couldn't play for him. And I couldn't play for him. I couldn't start for him. And I love the man. My dad likes the guy.
I think the head coach got a car deal, got a country club deal, got a clothing deal, and there was some other like stipend that they were getting towards their mortgage.
Mm-hmm. You could to be a really
in Parkersburg
to be a really good football coach in the high school level. I think it's very difficult to be a high school football coach, even in our state that takes it very seriously. I mean, I've seen some guys. I got one friend now who was a high school football coach, got blown out, and now he is not in the teaching profession or the coaching profession at all.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. It's a... He didn't do anything wrong. Like, he didn't get in trouble.
He's backtracking on it.
No. It's
to do that job.
Give us some initials just so we know.
I don't want to demean the work that he does now, but it's not being a high school football coach.
It's not as important as being a high school football coach.
It's not a high school football
coach. To do the job the right way, like some of the great coaches in this area do it. How many hours a week during the season?
All of them. To do it the right way in this state?
Yes.
All of them.
I will tell you, there is a coach I know who is very good, who spends every waking hour, whether it is on his own team or in the youth program, mm-hmm. making sure that his presence is always felt, he is spending them doing.
Because it's not just about varsity.
Relationship.
Right. It's not just about varsity.
Because
at that point, it's a program.
The best ones, the very best ones, they get a buy-in from the dads of the kids who are the youth program. Mm-hmm. Like, I will tell you now in the borough, it's basically started to streamline from the high school on down, and it's hard not to be all in. It is hard not to, with the success that they're having, it's very, very hard not to be all in. And all of a sudden, you're devoting every single extra second you have to it. There you go. So there you go. Yeah, it's a very difficult practice. Being a head coach in the NFL is a difficult practice. Jim Schwartz learned that firsthand, was a very good head coach, even though, you know, people, he got fired. Yeah, plenty of great coaches get fired in the NFL. He's been a very good defensive coordinator. I don't know if he's the greatest BSer, though. Here's Jim Schwartz yesterday in his press conference. Turn your radio up. Listen very closely to this.
At one time, teams that started 1-0 had a less chance to make the playoffs than the teams that started 0-1. The teams that were 0-1 had to confront their problems. They were embarrassed by the performance. It's a big game, and you have to go out, and it's an immediate self-check. So I think it's been a little bit more of that. We have a really proud group on offense and defense. They're anxious to put that week behind, come up with a win on the road.
So, okay.
He said that like a statement of fact.
I'm feeling good. Yeah.
It's better to start off 0-1 than 1-0. Here we go.
And, and remember, he's a Georgetown guy.
That's right.
He went to one of the best schools in the country.
Yeah.
And that means the Browns right in the driver's seat, right where they want to be.
So, a few minutes had passed, and Jeff Schoedel, our favorite.
Maybe the greatest in the history.
Guys. Writers. I love Mary Kay. We love all those folks, but Jeff Schoedel has a special spot in all our hearts in this room, because Schoedel goes, hold on here.
Where'd you come up with that 0-1 number? That's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, I don't remember when that was, but I distinctly remember like telling the team that. Who knows? Maybe I made it up. I don't know. It sounded good. But again, you know, just with human nature and things. Maybe somebody fed it to me to try to. But I think the message there is, anytime you lose a game, there might be a little bit more urgency to confront your problems.
Was that the first time in a while there's been real laughter in that building? Maybe that week. That week, that was much
needed.
That's
the first time anybody smiled in that room.
Maybe Big Kev said, hey, Schwartz, we need you to go lighten it up around here.
Oh, my gosh. Jeff, that's an interesting number. Means that's total BS. I can't find anything on that. It's what Jeff's thinking there. For this defense, some people are going, man, you guys are focused on the wrong thing. You guys keep talking about the quarterback. Why aren't you paying attention to the defense? Are they just trying to find another excuse?
Well, as far as...
Because I thought the defense last Sunday, it wasn't their greatest performance at all, but it certainly wasn't their worst performance I have ever seen.
Here's the one thing the only thing I wrestle with.
I have a lot of confidence with this defense going up against Trevor Lawrence on Sunday.
I do, too.
They had one really bad broken play, and they scored a touchdown on it, right?
Yeah.
That was the first.
And you see that all around the NFL in week one.
And Rodney said in studio, he said they didn't deserve that one.
The only thing is, it really is hard to grade them because it seemed like the Cowboys also had ulterior motives in the second half. This isn't college football. You're not running up the score. And
you mean like preservation type of thing?
Yeah, like remember, CeeDee Lamb was not in their full camp. Right. They had two rookie offensive linemen. They were not going to put those guys on islands and try to go out there and get Dak hurt. I mean, they did a good job against the pass rush after the first few drives, but you know that pass rush could come alive again. Why complicate things? You have the lead. The Browns offense looks like it has no chance in that game. So they didn't do much in the second half. So I didn't know who to give credit. I didn't know whether I should give the Browns defense a ton of credit for the second half. Maybe you watched the game multiple times going back.
Too many times.
In the second half, how much were the Cowboys really trying to press the issue?
No, I don't think very much at all. I think that they got to a point where, you know, you had said it was when it was 27-10, you started to go, all right. I was not there watching that game because I thought basically what would happen, that they would probably not turtle up, but bog it down a little bit, maybe sit on that lead because I don't think they want to show anything. I mean, if you have a chance to not show anybody anything, then you're going to go ahead and do it. I mean, that's part of the challenge of being a coach at that level. Is you try to hold back as much as you possibly can because the margins are so razor thin. I mean, they do that in college football. I mean, did you watch Ohio State in the first couple of weeks? I know that you were doing games on ESPN. Would you have another game coming up tomorrow, right? Yep. Akron?
Oh, yeah. Akron Colgate.
There it is, baby. So the fight and toothpaste. So you have teams that don't show anything. That's why I was so impressed with Ohio State. They're running basic stuff. They're not pulling out all the tricks and all the stops. They're running basic patterns. They're running basic dive. They're doing basic things. They're just way better, but they're executing so well that it impressed me. And they're putting nothing on tape that anybody can see. They're going to be vanilla. I almost think that they're going to do kind of what Harbaugh did last year, where people were ripping him for just running the ball against Penn State. It's like, I'm not going to show you anything unless I have to. I'll be as vanilla as I can until I absolutely have to pull out some stops. And they pulled out some stops until they could be vanilla in the final game of the season. Like, that was a lot of things that I saw. And they're going to do the same thing in the NFL. Sorry, I'm out in the weeds, but that got nitty-gritty real
quick.
And look,
Myles Garrett was definitely, he's somebody who will show you when he's tired. He's such a mammoth individual that you can tell when Myles is tired. The posture, all the telltale signs. JOK played every snap defensively in that game. Now, JOK did not make a lot of noise in that game. I think a lot of what the Cowboys were doing, a lot of those trap plays, a lot of the jet plays, that was kind of take JOK out because they know what a weapon he is. But I think they were gassed. The offense just didn't give them any
breathing
room.
But they ran the same jet sweep four times. They did not want to show any sort of deviance from it because whatever sort of branch that comes off of that play, they're going to show that later against somebody else that they need to in a game that they need to have.